Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. Live at First Horizon Park. Sounds open their home season tonight. Pregame at 6:20. First pitch 6:35 on 94.9 The Fan with our man Jeff Hem, who will join us at 2 o'clock. He's Nick Frazier. I'm Chase McCabe. Brandon Bigsby, a.k.a. Brando, back at the studio. We're getting Tim Hasselbeck all lined up. We'll have him here in just a second. We'll also have a four-pack of tickets to Thursday's game to give away here in just a few minutes. Let's bring in Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. Tim, I got good news for you. You don't have to deal with Joe this week.
Oh, wait. He's on vacation?
He is. He's down in Key West. We don't really know what he's up to, but he's hanging out, and he'll be back on Thursday. But he was very sad that he was going to miss his visit with you.
I'm surprised that he didn't, you know, step away from the swim up bar to join the segment, you know? Quick question though. Do we think he keeps his t-shirt on when he swims? Like, what do we think he does? Does he keep it, or does he wear floaties? How does he look in the pool? What are we thinking?
I don't know if I want to envision that, to be honest with you. But yeah, I would say floaties. I could see him with the a lot of sunscreen on the nose, maybe some goggles and some floaties.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know what? Considering it's a lot around lunchtime, we probably should change the topic.
Yeah, I agree.
Tim, I could see Joe wearing floaties on his ankles to hold him up above water if he wants to do the full spread eagle, like if he wants to do that. I feel like I could see Joe doing that with his ankles along with his arms. So Joe's definitely a floaty guy.
He's a floaty guy. All right, that's good to know. Well, it's good to be gone with you guys either way.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. The owners' meetings going on right now, and so that gives GMs and coaches an opportunity to speak. One thing Robert Saleh said that I thought was interesting, and this is a defensive guy talking, but what Borgonzi had said, they're going to look to take the best player available at four. Saleh said edge rushers are playmakers too when asked about getting a playmaker in this year's draft. As a quarterback, how do you feel hearing that from a head coach?
Well, I think that he's exactly right. And, you know, when you look at impact positions, you know, I think, you know, running back, especially for rookie running backs, they can be an impact position because, those guys touch the football a lot. So that's the case, certainly. Quarterback's the case. Receiver could be the case because they score touchdowns. And then I really do think in terms of closing games, creating negative plays, you know, the importance of third down. I think it's a fair assessment that edge rushers are playmakers. So I just think it's a fair assessment of the position and the impact it can have. And when you look at, you know, the highest paid players in the game, it obviously, you know, you have the quarterbacks that are in the mix. You have receivers that are making a lot of money because they score touchdowns. Running back because of the longevity of the career, you know, of that position is a little bit different. But elite pass rushers are guys that are paid as, you know, quote unquote playmakers, just when you look at, you know, the compensation. So I think it's fair. I think it's true. I don't know that it necessarily gives us the information we're looking for in terms of, you know, where the Titans are going in the draft.
Do you think, though, with Borgonzi saying best player available, which how many times have you heard a GM say that? I mean, that's the typical answer. But looking at the Titans roster, don't you think that is the right move? If it's Love, if it's Bain, if it's Reese, I mean, any of those guys, I don't think you can necessarily go wrong there if you take one of them at four.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you, you know, because while GMs can say, like, okay, we're just going to take the best player available, well, what if you have massive holes on your roster and your best player available, you know, is a, I'm making this up, obviously, but like is a quarterback, but you're not going to draft a quarterback because you have one. So, you know, I do think when general managers say we're going to take the best player available, you know, some of that is to protect themselves when they do draft somebody because it's a team need. You could say he was the best player on the board. He was the highest rated player, you know, that we had on the board. And, you know, unless you're the person that actually did the rankings, you don't know if it's true or not. So, you know, let's just say they end up, you know, taking Bain, but they had, you know, Bailey ranked higher. Like, in that environment, like, they're going to say, we got the highest rated player on our board when, you know, in fact, they didn't. So I think guys say that. I think sometimes you can be in, if you have a good roster, you can truly say, listen, this is the highest ranked guy we have. We're going to take him. But I think if you have holes on your roster, the roster management and where you're allocating your resources does matter quite a bit. And that's why you can say, look, the need at this position is greater than the difference in the rating that we have on these two separate positions.
Tim, a lot of people believe that next year's draft is going to be really, really strong and deep, whereas this year's draft, I think there's definitely good talent, but not to that level. Do you think that teams are going to keep that in mind with some of the decisions they make in this year's draft, whether it's, you know, taking a guy at a certain position or trades that they may make?
Yeah, I've heard people kind of reference that as it relates to quarterback. And the only thing I would say is that I feel like people are wrong about that all of the time. You know what I mean? Where you sit there, oh, but next year's quarterback class is going to be so good. And then you get there and you're like, what? Wait, what are you talking about? Like, that's... No, it's not, you know, and then other years where, you know, they kind of, you know, say, you know, it's not a great class. And then you look up and there's, you know, three guys that go in the first round. So I think it's way too far out to project. Like, I think we probably all agree. Like, at one point, people were talking about Carson Beck, like he could be the top pick in the draft, correct?
Yeah.
Like it didn't happen. Who was the kid at Ole Miss years ago? I think he went in the year where he was going to be the number one pick in the draft, and I don't think he got drafted when he came out.
Who are you talking? Yeah,
Knees or something like that. What was his name? Anyway, like, you know what I'm talking about. Like, he was good. Like, there was all this talk. It was going to be this and that, and then next thing you know, he played his senior year. It was a disaster, and it didn't work out. So, I don't know. I think that there is. I think the process is it's a critical process, the draft evaluation process. And I think it's real easy to just shine some love on these guys that haven't gone through the process and have, you know, every wart uncovered, you know, on them. And then I think there's also a lot of pressure to playing, you know, as a, you know, when you go into the season with incredibly high expectations. And so sometimes guys just don't deliver in that environment. And then there's an element where, you know, part of the NFL projection is exactly that. It's a projection. It's not always just based on production. And so, you know, with that, the expectations change when there's this projection of, hey, this guy's a first rounder. And then you watch him play and you're like, well, he doesn't dominate the way a first rounder dominates. It's like, well, because the NFL teams are projecting based on, you know, other factors other than production. So I don't know. I don't think people are waiting because they think, you know, what's behind door number two next year is just going to be so significantly better.
We will have more with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. We're live at First Horizon Park, continuing our conversation with ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck and the head coach at Innsworth. Nick?
Tim, when it comes to the Tennessee Titans and the offensive line, Mike Borgonzi said, quote, keeping all options open for the interior line. Just nobody really knows the future of Peter Skoronski. Titans have roughly $63, $64 million. I know they're trying to really work out a deal there. But overall, do you see the Titans going after another offensive lineman before the season, or is that money allotted for more of a Peter Skoronski deal?
Yeah, I think Skoronski would be somebody they want to keep, and so I do think that there's going to be a portion of it there. I think you're always looking for linemen. You're looking for versatile linemen. I just, when you look at, the season and it being long, guys missing because, listen, maybe it's a week because of a concussion. Maybe it's an MCL that has you out for a couple of weeks. You know, it can completely derail your season. So, I think that versatile offensive linemen are always going to be of value. And I think that, teams are always going to be looking for guys like that. Honestly, throughout the entire year, this time of year into training camp, when injuries start to come up, I don't know. And maybe I'm just thinking of that. Like, if you guys have seen the Frank Ragnow story from Detroit, obviously he retired, was a great player in Detroit, played through a bunch of injuries, retired. The Lions are making him repay some of the signing bonus. It just reminds me what guys are going through, and you don't know when it's going to end from somebody just because of the physical toll of the position. I think they'll draft a lineman. I think we'll see them sign at least one more veteran offensive lineman, before, training camp starts. And I think it might be after, mini camps because, guys they draft maybe aren't as ready as they thought they were. I mean, I just think that will be the routine for the Titans as it will for some other teams.
Yeah, and sticking on the offensive side of the ball, Will Levis, obviously Mike Borgonzi's mentioned that he hasn't committed to a backup quarterback per se. But when it comes to Levis, he gave him a little praise. What do you see in that? Is that more of just trade capital, or is that actual truth?
I think it's trade capital because it just feels as if, the Mitch Trubisky signing, Trubisky's not signing to be the third guy.
Right.
And they're not giving him the money that they gave him to be the third guy. So now, could you keep Levis on his rookie contract as a third? Yeah, you could, especially considering, you're not paying, veteran starter money to your starter. So it's not impossible for them to keep all three. But I also don't want to sit here and say that there's actually a competition for the backup spot because I don't believe that there is. But that also doesn't mean that they're going to trade him. Now I will say, I did run into Will this off season. I've seen him working out. He looks great. And he, in many ways, he's always looked great because he's so physically talented. But he appears, obviously when he had the surgery, he appears healthy, he appears excited about the future. And so I do think he ends up being somebody that's very desirable to other teams outside of just the Titans.
Interesting. On a broader note, when it comes to the league as a whole, the NFL Referees Association obviously looking for some sort of increase in pay. NFL's already mentioned that they're already looking for D1, D2, and D3 referees to kind of fill in for those interim referee spots. What do you think that does for the product aspect of the NFL going forward if they don't come to a deal?
Well, Nick, I just tell you this. Like, all the listeners that watch college football know that some of the college football, and let me first say, officiating is hard, okay? Yeah. So, high school, college, pro, whatever, it's hard. Now, college officiating, you just watch games. It's bad. Period, it's bad. And so, this idea that the NFL and whatever billion-dollar business industry that it is okay with saying, we're going to go get some people that are bad at their job at the college level and have them do it at the pros, I think is insulting to, the NFL referees that, by and large, are not perfect, but when you think about the degree of difficulty of what they do, I think it's an insult to them. I would also say, and obviously there's a little bit more runway to vet guys out in terms of officiating and things of that nature, but we can talk about the Fail Mary and some bad officiating back when we had replacement refs, during that lockout. but we also had officials, you know, on Facebook talking about, you know, their fandom of their team and then going out and officiating games. Like, remember what a disaster that was. Yeah. It wasn't just that they were bad at officiating the games. There were other factors to this that I think is going down a really dangerous path in terms of you can't have that in an industry where there's so much gambling on games and things like that, to have, you know, officials that honestly just are not professional enough to be up for the task. So, look, the NFL is going to negotiate hard. I think the referees have a right to negotiate hard, but I think the NFL has got to be really careful thinking that, you know, it's just it's a piece of labor that can be easily replaced, because I don't think it can be.
And another factor into all this, the first game of the season is going to be Melbourne, Australia. And being in Melbourne, I'm a rugby fan, so the Melbourne Storm is one of their top three teams in the rugby league right now. They're all big fans of that just aggressive style of football. So the fact of the matter is, if the NFL Referees Association has the interim refs for that first game of the season and it comes out to be a bad product, it's just a bad look for the NFL as a whole.
It's an awful look for the NFL. And then, you know, the other part of it is, because of the amount of detail that we get on replays and things of that nature, like, our expectation, because, you know, you can say what you want about the NFL officiating. They get things wrong. They're always going to get things wrong. But they get a lot of stuff right. Like, the NFL officials, I'll give you a call, like, that's an example. In high school football, illegal man downfield not being called is one of the worst missed calls in high school football. Like, it's unbelievable how poorly it's officiated. Okay. Mm-hmm. In college football, it is only officiated slightly better. In NFL football, they almost never miss it. It's fact. And so I think that, you know, while NFL officials are going to get things wrong, they are also operating at a level significantly higher than the crews at other levels of football. And so, and then the game moves faster, and, you know, the players are faster. There are more cameras in terms of the scrutiny on calls and the ability for the viewer at home to know if the official got the call right or wrong. And, you know, I think it will no doubt impact the confidence people have in the product that's on the field.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. I want to go back to the offensive line that we were talking earlier. You know, having the opportunity to work with the late, great Floyd Reese for as long as I did, I would laugh when, you know, we would talk O-line in the draft and he could be like, you know, I can get a guard fifth, sixth round, something like that. Do you think that offensive line is in most drafts the deepest position to find throughout the draft, where you can actually find a player that's going to be able to play for you and develop into an NFL player?
I do. It's got the lowest interior offensive line. It's got the lowest bust rate in the first round. And if you, you know, kind of use the threshold of, did the guy make it to a second contract with his team as the determination of if he was a bust or not, interior offensive line has the lowest bust rate. So center and guard combined. So, you know, and then I think there's an element, and you know, Floyd was probably like that. You know, some guys feel really good about their offensive line evaluation, their ability to identify, you know, what's important for a guy to be able to make it as an offensive lineman in the NFL. And it's way easier at center and guard than it is at tackle, just because, you know, tackle in some respects, you know, there are minimum requirements to be able to be good at tackle.
Yeah.
That. you know, kind of outside of the framework of that, that have had some success. And so that's why I do think people can miss at tackle more than they can miss in the interior offensive line. So okay, I wouldn't disagree with Floyd's assessment of being able to find guys. And there's a long history of undrafted free agents that have gone on,
sure,
you know, to have amazing careers as centers and guards in the NFL.
He is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Ensworth. You got any spring practices coming up?
Well, yeah, we do. We got 7 spring practices coming up. It's funny. I've actually got a couple of text messages today from, you know, like Virginia Tech and Austin Peay reached out saying, like, hey, can you get us the spring break graph or spring ball graphic? I'm like, man, we got to get on. It's right around the corner. So, yeah, we'll have 7 practices in May. And it'll be good. Be good. We got a lot of multi-sport athletes over here at Ensworth, so it's great. So we're gonna squeeze it in inside playoff baseball, playoff lacrosse, and even some track meets.
Love it. Gonna be fun for sure. Appreciate it as always, Tim.
All right, see you, fellas. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Ensworth, joins us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Must listen to radio. We'll react to some of the things he had to say and continue the conversation from First Horizon Park. He's Nick Frazier. I'm Chase McCabe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on a good day, Tuesday, at First Horizon Park. We're going to give away some tickets here in a few minutes. I want to remind you, Vanderbilt Baseball takes on the Bruins of Belmont over at the Hawk tonight. First pitch at 6 o'clock, and you can hear it all on 102.5 The Game starting at 5:45. Presented by Gary Force Acura. Hopefully they don't go 16 innings.
Yeah, let's not have that.
That would not be cool. Talking a lot of the football offseason, presented by Tennessee Brew Works, the official craft beer of the football offseason here on 102.5 The Game. I thought Tim made some, you know, interesting points when talking about playmakers and, you know, and all of that. And look, I agree. I think if you can find just a game changer, I think Robert Saleh said it best, find a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that, that's going to automatically make your team better.
Yeah, I mean, game changer for sure. There was stuff that was posted online from Alec Iomaner's camp of just his off-season workouts. He looks really good.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like he's gained at least about 10, maybe 15 pounds of weight. I mean, I'm not well in tune with the Titans in their house, whatever it may be, but online he looks like he is fit, ready to go for another season. I'm not saying he's a perennial playmaker, but he could develop into being one of those guys.
Yeah, no, I'm with he. I would love to see him take a step forward because I liked his game last year. I thought that, you know, he definitely got better as the season went on. He added a lot to the offense. You know, I don't think he's a number one receiver by any means, but I think he's a serviceable, really good receiver. I mean, he had 515 yards on 41 catches last year, 4 touchdowns. So you can only hope to improve on that, and that was in 16 games.
Yeah, and I also, too, I like the way he high-pointed the football, too.
Yeah.
Last season, that was his biggest trait for me coming into his rookie season was that he high-pointed the football well at Stanford. And just the yards after catch, that's what made him a difference maker for the Titans go draft guy like that. So if he's gained some weight in the offseason, which is what it looks like online, and he's able to get better at high-pointing the football in year two, to me, I see that touchdown number doubling to 8. Easy. I really do. I think he could get 8 touchdowns this year. And look, if Chim Dike is a helper in that aspect on offense, that's great. But to me, I think the depth will eventually get there where they don't have to use him on offense all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he's good enough to use on offense, then you use him on offense.
Sure.
I mean, that's what, you know, D-Mace will tell you, that he kept working being a receiver and guys got hurt and he got his opportunity and they realized, like, we can't take this guy out.
Right.
And Derek became the greatest Titans receiver of all time, and still is, in my opinion. A.J. Brown, I think, was on track to break that. But so it's all about what, you know, Chim can do. I'm going to be really curious of how Calvin Ridley fits into all of this because I don't think we've talked about that a whole lot now that they've decided to keep him after restructuring his contract. So you bring in Wandale Robinson. You have Ridley, you have DK, you have Iomaner, you have Bryce Oliver. You still could draft someone, you know, you still could sign someone. So there's obviously that they could add there, but Ridley is kind of the interesting X factor that if he can hang on to the ball. You think about some of those catches, if he had made them last year, how different things could have been.
Well, just imagine how different the season would have gone after that Denver game. If he caught those passes that mattered the most in that game, especially the one up the seam in the middle of the field, that would have changed the game to me. They would have won that game easily. But, yeah. Again, that's all ands, if, or buts, candies, and whatever else. So
ifs, ands, or buts, candies, and
nuts. Yeah. If he can catch the football, like you alluded to, I agree. He could really be a huge asset to this offense, and it could open up a lot more things other than just the passing game. That means that defenses have to game plan for a guy like Calvin Ridley, and again, he's one of the best route runners that we've seen in a long time here for the Tennessee Titans. Everybody thought it'd be Julio Jones. Obviously, A.J. Brown had that breakaway physicality, but I mean, if Calvin Ridley can stay healthy and along with being a good route runner, he could be a good serviceable wide receiver for this team. He really could.
615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Our question of the day, in honor of being here at First Horizon Park at the Sounds, is your favorite baseball go-to snack. We had a lot of votes for hot dogs, peanuts, bratwurst. Obviously, beer has to be thrown into the mix as well. I said a beer and a hot dog. You can't go wrong there. You said
chicken tenders.
Okay.
And a Coca-Cola or something. Can't go wrong with it.
You're forever a six-year-old, and I love that about you.
Look, that's one that's one trait I love having is, you know, I don't mind drinking a beer every once in a while or, you know, a different, you know, adult beverage of some sorts, but you can't take the kid out of an adult. You just can't, and that's the beauty of it. When you get older and you keep aging and aging and aging, never get rid of your kid mentality, and I feel like that's something you have to carry on as you get older.
Yeah, so if you want to weigh in on that and our question of the day, 615-737-1025, and we can read some of those answers or take some of your calls about your favorite baseball snack as we're here at the ballpark. Jeff Hem going to join us at 2 o'clock, and we'll get into more baseball and the sounds and all of that with him. Nothing groundbreaking has really come from the NFL owners' meetings. They did announce a few new rules. Let's see. The approved playing rules summary by the competition committee to permit the kicking team to declare an onside kick at any time during the game. So they've gotten rid of that it had to be, which they should.
Finally.
To eliminate the kicking team's incentive to intentionally kick the ball out of bounds when kicking from the 50. They have modified the kickoff alignment requirements for the receiving team players in the setup zone. They have allowed league personnel to consult with on-field officials when considering disqualifications for both flagrant football acts and non-football acts without being called on the field. For 1 year only, the NFL will allow NFL officiating department to correct clear and obvious mistakes made by on-field officials that impact the game. In the event there is a work stoppage involving the game officials represented by the NFL Referees Association. That's interesting.
Going to have a lot of that this year.
So if you're going to have the reserve refs, basically the eye in the sky can look at some stuff.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of that. You know, we talked with Tim a couple segments ago about the interim referees when it takes place in the NFL. That's going to be a huge emphasis in the first, I'd say, 4 to 5 weeks, because if it's going to be like the Fail Mary back in 2012, 2014, we're going to see a lot of this week one all the way through week six of just carrying on of missed calls and missed calls.
A couple of bylaws that have been updated allows the league office to adjust the procedures and related dates and deadlines for the final roster reduction to accommodate an international game scheduled in the first week of the regular season. They have established that Saturday and Sunday of Labor Day weekend to be business days to provide clubs with personnel notices during the first weekend after the roster reduction. They've also said they're going to permit players on the reserve PUP list to begin a 21-day practice period after the club's second game of the regular season. And then one rule that was put in by Pittsburgh to make permanent change to the that was implemented during the 2025 season that permits clubs to have one video or phone call with no more than five prospective UFAs during the two-day negotiation period and to permit clubs to make travel arrangements with such players upon agreeing to terms.
Wow.
So there you go. That's some of the rule changes that have come out of the owners' meetings in day number two.
You know, I wonder how much, and again, I know I'm harping on this a lot. Please stop me if it gets annoying, Chase. But I wonder how much of those rule changes are playing into factor of the referees that are still in negotiations right now.
Could be.
I feel like with those referees not having a new deal done yet, that's hindering some of those new rule changes. I'm not saying the ones that have just been implemented, but future rules that could be implemented this year that are not going to be.
Could be. Do you want to go see the Sounds coming up Thursday night here at First Horizon Park? I got a 4-pack of tickets on the line to see the Sounds take on the Charlotte Knights, which is the AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox, coming up this Thursday, first pitch at 6:35. Caller number 4 in honor of a 4-pack at 615-737-1025 will win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Sounds take on the Knights here at First Horizon Park on Thursday. We'll have more coming next here on Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday, First Horizon Park. Congratulations to Kevin. He won the 4-pack of tickets to see the Sounds take on the Charlotte Knights Thursday here at First Horizon Park. And we'll probably have more opportunities for you to win. Brandon Bigsby is back at the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Enjoy hanging out with Brando here on the show. And Dr. Crane, you've done a wonderful job filling in for Big Joe. You'll do that again tomorrow
before
he returns on Thursday. To a lot of fanfare, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's in hog heaven right now in his little trip. I mean, he saw, what, the Beach Boys?
Yeah, which that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bucket list thing for anybody, really. But, no, I appreciate you guys letting me fill in for Joe while he's been out, and it'll be fun tomorrow. Not gone yet, everybody, not gone yet.
And we're working on cool stuff for tomorrow, but Predators won't be in action until Thursday night. They'll head out, I believe they're heading out pretty early tomorrow out to the West Coast to give them time to kind of acclimate to the time change. But when you talk about a road trip, this one is so very important because of the head-to-head matchups with the Kings and the Sharks that they're going to have. Last night, not many games going on in the National Hockey League, and there's not really – there's 10 tonight. So – relatively full schedule, but the Golden Knights won in John Tortorella's debut against the Canucks 4-2.
Okay.
The Penguins 8-3 over the Islanders. The Islanders have just struggled as of late, and the Avs beat the Flames 9-2. So I would say that they're cooking on all cylinders. This one was interesting. The Sharks beat the Blues 5-4. Mm-hmm. Why is that interesting? Well, because they're right there together in the standings, and they're chasing the Predators. And so after play last night, the Preds still hold a playoff spot. The Sharks now move ahead of Winnipeg and St. Louis with 75 points, tied with the Kraken. They're 1 point back of the Kings, 2 points back of the Preds.
Wow. It's a close race.
It is close. So that those games were very important. And then tonight let's see. You will have, I think, Seattle's in action tonight. Yep.
At Edmonton.
Yeah, and then the Jets are in Chicago to take on the Blackhawks. That one's important. I love this song. Triple H, let's go. All right. And then Wednesday, there are three games, but the Blues are in L.A. to take on the Kings. The Ducks in San Jose to take on the Sharks. So those two games tomorrow night, immensely important before the Preds play the Kings on Thursday.
Absolutely. I think Wednesday night is the marquee night for Preds fans to be watching just because of, look, if St. Louis beats the Kings, that's huge for standings purposes. Also, I feel like it's a null and void for St. Louis. Yeah, they're still kind of out there for points purposes, but
they're in the mix, man.
They're creeping up.
They have played well. I mean, since the deadline, they have been very good. They're 6-2-2 in their last 10. I know they lost last night, but they went on a heater there for a minute, and I mean they're 4 points back. So,
yeah.
They're not They're not dead yet, I guess is the best way to put it.
As of right now on Money Puck, it has the Blues having a 5.2% chance of making the playoffs. I do find it interesting how they have Seattle over Nashville when it comes to playoff percentages of getting in, because to me, like, I see Nashville as a better team than Seattle, but I get the points.
Well,
situation.
They have two games in hand.
Right.
Too. So that helps. I mean, Nashville only has 8 games left, whereas Seattle has 10. L.A. has 9 left. I mean, the games in hand will play a factor in this. That's why, you know, control what you can control and just win your games.
Yeah, and I was listening to DVD yesterday with Willie and Adam and D-Mace. Obviously, they were talking about just the goaltending, and even Willie alluded to it. Yeah, Juuse Saarinen has been really good. How do you see the Preds differentiating the goaltending on this road trip? Do you think they kind of split it like one night Saros, one night Saarinen, or are they riding with the hot hand?
That's a good question. Let me pull the schedule up here. They have a back-to-back. They have one more back-to-back left, and that is next Monday and Tuesday, L.A. and Anaheim. So I would assume Anonin's going to get one of those.
Right.
I think you'll see them use him, you know, with the 8 games left. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he played Saturday night in San Jose. And then depending on kind of where you're at, you can look at Thursday at Utah. That Minnesota game back here could be a possibility. So I think he's got at least 2, maybe 3 more starts.
Okay. Yeah. I on my list over here, I was doing this yesterday, there are 5 games on this Preds in April that they need to win. Yeah, both the games would be against the Kings, both the games against the Sharks. I would like to see them beat the Mammoth. That'd be nice. Yep. That's a backdoor open to the first wild card spot, if that is the case. And then I have, let's see, Saros starts against the Kings, alternate with Anonin, back to Saros, then keep Saros in net against the Mammoth, because that's more of an important game, if that's the case, for that wild card one, if they are in the talks for that.
Well, I mean, I think that's fair. And then I'd love to see them beat Anaheim, too.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if they could get wild card one and then draw Anaheim, I like that matchup in the first round much better than going up against Colorado. I mean, Colorado scoring 9 goals last night. Like, holy cow.
It's almost like we're just living in Colorado's world. They
so
just
let's see.
Keep scoring.
Let me give you the how things went down. Drury scored first, his 10th. Kadri scored back-to-back, 15 and 16. Landeskog scored his 11th. Our man Parker Kelly scoring his 18th of the year. Good job, Parker.
There we go.
McKinnon with number 49. Natchez with 35. Sam Malinsky with his 5th. And then Lekkonen scored his 20th. Those were the 9 goal scorers last night. And then Strom and Ottman added a couple for Calgary, and that was it.
Good Lord.
So a lot of goal scoring last night.
If you're a fantasy hockey fan, you're definitely happy as a clam if you had a bunch of Colorado Avalanche players.
Yeah. In the Blues and the Sharks, Theo Lindstein scored his first of the year for St. Louis. Wennberg with his 15th. Celebrini with his 37th. Buchnevich with his 17th for St. Louis. Celebrini with his 38th. Then Wennberg with his 16th. Broberg scores, Cam Fowler scores for St. Louis, and then Adam Gaudet gets the game winner in the third period for San Jose, his 16th. So that's how that one went.
I love Adam Gaudet.
Yeah.
You want to know why? Good. That name just sounds great.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
He's Gaudet a lot going on for
him. There you go. Yep.
Yeah, that was good.
I was waiting for it.
Coming up next, we're here at First Horizon Park. We're going to talk more baseball with Jeff Hem, the voice of the sounds. He will join us live here in just a few minutes. Chasing Big Joe on a Tuesday, 102.5 The Game.
What's up, Foos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.